Hello. At all.
Hello. I was just stopped recording and I was doing it again.
You better delete all that.
Yeah, that's not going in. Don't worry, everybody. It was just highly confidential information from work that would was quite interesting and you'd have enjoyed it. But maybe if you give us 50 quid, I'll tell you it. I'll give you a ring. Good afternoon and good evening, everybody. It is the N35 podcast. We are back after being away on a hiatus for quite a while.
Basically Alex is just really lazy.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah.
We've got a dog. I was too busy playing with the dog. But we did talk at least since Hurst left, and then we're back now.
Yeah, we did an emergency edition, didn't we?
We did, yes. Other than just doing a normal one. We will try getting back in the spirit of things now, because I think both of our lives have settled down a little bit now, so we can start doing them on a more regular basis. Yeah. But Marcus Bignot is our man. What are your first impressions?
Well, Alex, we've got a discussion to have on Marcus Bignot's Black and White Army. Are you disapproving of the chant?
I was put down. It is the same amount of syllables as Alan Buckley's.
It is Alan Buckley, isn't it?
But yeah. I think it's the harsh tones of the vowel, so the k and the g and the t just makes it a bit harder to. It doesn't just merge. But I'll deal with it. I'll get over it.
So
I'm fine.
So are you proposing more of that? Marcus.
Yeah, that was it.
It's usually like descendancy anyway, isn't it?
Do you know what? The atmosphere at Crawley wasn't incredible.
I can't imagine it was.
I don't think the play helped, but it wasn't fantastic. It was all as...
Mate, well, because I went to Crawley that first non-league game. Well, we're not in the same place, so we can't tell when we've finished talking.
No, that's true. Not that it ever stopped us before.
No, absolutely not. but it was a bit devoid of atmosphere that one time that I went. So
yeah, it was.
I'm glad you took the hit for the podcast and you went this time.
It's the smaller. It's basically a smaller version of Glanford Park. It's on a roundabout next to a motorway. But it was
the highest honour you can give a stadium.
Absolutely. Right, I'll tell you something, we parked right behind the away end. It was pretty good. But it was a bit disappointing. I'll tell you something though, brioche. They were selling that in the takeaway place, because there was nothing going around apart from vending machines.
Bloody hell. Was there some quinoa there as well?
No, German sausage in a brioche.
Oh wow!
I'm sure I heard someone say, "Can I have that German sausage in brioche?"
Brioche.
But it was a nice little ground. It was all right. Yeah.
Should we get onto the game in a minute? And just
I was getting on with it. What's your impression of Bignot?
Well, last time we spoke, I definitely had reservations. I think it's fair to say, and. They were sort of eased a bit when we saw the footage of him the last game with Solihull. I think the way that he left that club and the way that he's held in such high regard spoke volumes. And he seems a really bright bloke with a lot of good ideas. So it's going to be up and down, and people need to chill out if it doesn't go our way for a bit. But I think we'll be fine.
He's poor Paul Hurst. He's the total antithesis of what he is, isn't he?
Yeah, it's we've gone from an incredibly stubborn, incredibly good manager. Don't get me wrong, because I liked Hurst, but he was incredibly bloody stubborn.
Dour Yorkshireman.
And one hated the media, so you could tell he resented the fans a little bit.
Hated the fans.
and then we get this bloke in. He's like an absolute mental Nigel Adkins that just talks in riddles.
Yeah. Did you see his? Have you had a chance to listen to his thing that was put out today, the Thursday call out with him, saying he was falling in love with the town a little bit. I've got to say, I'm falling in love. I'm getting the butterflies.
He's a madman.
You're coming on a bit strong here, mate. I might take out a restraining order at this rate.
We've only been out for dinner yet, Marcus.
Yeah, exactly. Christ. You sent me 15 messages on WhatsApp and I've only just got in the house.
I dare to check the Snapchat.
Yeah, exactly. Might be an Ian Botham incident.
Oh,
if you don't know what we're talking about, Google it. Actually, no, don't Google it.
For fuck's sake, don't Google it. Oh dear, wait till I have the tone after about 2 minutes there, Alex. Brilliant, you're done.
Well, you blame one of our best all-rounding cricketers for tweeting a good googly.
Oh dear.
But I quite like him at the moment. He's going about it. He's making all the right noises, isn't he? And
And he's not afraid to change up the formations, and he's not afraid to make early substitutes, and he's basically the opposite of Hurst.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not the worst thing in the world, is it, when you've had that? It certainly buys you some time.
Yeah, especially when we've had Hurst for, well, it was over 5 years, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Something like that. And so something completely fresh, I think, feels good in a way, just to start with, and just need to give him a bit of time. The one thing that concerned me, more than anything, was people losing the rag after we lose.
It happened
after Crawley, and it happened after the Barnet meltdown.
Yeah, I guess it did, didn't it? I mean, I was...
It was bizarre.
Because of the manner of defeat at Crawley, I was pissed off.
Yeah, well, I mean...
I wasn't at Barnet, so I can't comment on that.
I mean,
but
we all want to win, so when we lose, of course we're pissed off. But
yeah.
just the overreaction sometimes is just ridiculous.
As I've said, I've had no problem... I have no problem with my town giving 110%, throwing everything at it, and if they don't win and they're getting beaten by a better footballer team, then so be it. It happens.
Yeah.
We're never going to be all conquering, and I don't want to be supporting a team that are all conquering. But the manner of performance at Crawley was poor. I know we'll come on to it, but the other games, it's certainly not dull.
Yeah, well, I was at Barnet, and first half it started a bit quiet, and then just Bogle out of nowhere just turned on the gas, and before we knew it, we were 2-0 up, and then we just had an absolute meltdown for about 5 minutes, and we finished 2-2.
You can't credit Barnet's Omar Bogle is really good.
Yeah, Kindy. Well, he won one penalty, and then
I mean our Bogle going to Barnet.
Right. Yeah,
no wonder they want to put 250k down.
I think that is just one of the biggest piss takes of all time.
I'm assuming that's just a down payment, right? And then they've got the other 55 installments of the same amount.
Stick a zero on it. So it was a bit disappointing coming away from the Barnet game, and then you go on Twitter and people were like just having a go at Bogle, and I know most of it was from sort of chavs that have had accumulator on or whatever, but I mean it's just like calm down a bit.
And that's one of the problems with Ackies and stuff, isn't it? I didn't really think about it before, but it's like, wind your necks in, lads, Christ.
Yeah. Yeah, so from what I've seen so far, it's been pretty positive. I think it's good to see that the team and the group of players have sort of stuck together and seem to have a fresh burst of energy from it and kick on from the good start that we had under Hurst.
And and looking at the formation that we set out for Crawley when we were there, I was like, oh, that's pretty much what I would have put out, barring say McAllister and Davies. That's what I'd have gone with, because it was it looked like a 4-2-3-1, wasn't it? Bogle up front
it's kind of fluid because it can turn into a 4-3-3, it can turn into a flat sort of five in the middle.
Yeah, it's quite popular, isn't it? Anyway, so and it seems to work, but it's certainly because we're so used to 4-4-2, and that's not just down to Hurst. That's every manager we've ever had. That sort of those different positions. It's a bit odd, isn't it? You just
Breaking news, Alex. We can break some news that's going to be 2 days old by the time that we get this edited.
Has he gone to Barnet?
No, Vos has torn his thigh. He won't play before Christmas, according to Humberside.
Well, he certainly wasn't fucking running at Crawley. He did that.
Yeah, well, I like Vos. I mean, you were there and he obviously had a down game, but I think in general Vos offers quite a lot of creativity.
Yeah, he was one of my main things that I quite liked at the start of the season, but fuck me, he was shit.
Yeah, hopefully he's going to have a few months to dwell on it by the looks of it.
Yeah, it seems to be, doesn't it, which is a shame, but the other thing they were talking about was McAllister and Davies should be coming back quicker than he thought. So you never know when they'll come back. Hopefully before Donny.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd forgotten about McAllister, to be honest.
Yeah,
because that Morecambe game, he looked really good at the start of the season. Yeah. And then it was kind of like one of those niggling injuries that actually turned out to be pretty bad, and then eventually he got surgery, and then that was another 6 weeks or whatever. So I kind of forgot he was a midfield option, to be honest.
So, yes, he's pulled up now, and he'll be a loss, so I know that, but I just want to pull him apart a little bit. There was a point in which he was 3 yards ahead of someone with the last couple of minutes to go, and he was beaten by the central defender for the running for the ball over the top. That was pretty, but his pass to Bolawinra for the first goal was fantastic.
Yeah, see, because that's always the thing with those. It's like you look at him on a pitch and his demeanour, and he looks like he's moving like a sloth, just kind of really casually sort of, and then There are times on the pitch, like Notts County away, where after we went 2-0 up, he was just absolutely taking a piss out of Notts County players. He was absolutely destroying them.
Yeah, especially down in this league, it's a very thin line to tread. There's very difference between a cultured, almost discount Pirlo to being another Thomas Pino or a Peter Sweeney.
Oh, that Frenchman.
Where you're a bit of a lazy fucker, but occasionally you can pull out something incredible.
I think Rose is a bit more than that.
I think so as well.
His demeanour sometimes, like if he's having a bad game, like his demeanour, it doesn't sort of hold him in good stead because the fans sort of take it the wrong way sometimes, I think.
No, absolutely. And it was certainly a poor game. And he didn't, the one thing I hated was he didn't stop whinging. Every ball was wrong. Everything that everybody else did was wrong. And he wouldn't fight for it. He wouldn't go for the drop down. But Disley looked a little bit leggy, but I guess he's played quite a few games of late. The Gowling made a couple of errors, and
Gowling sort of annoying me a bit. Not annoying me, but he worries me a bit at the back because I do think he's become more and more error prone.
Yeah, that first goal, he went to ground for no reason. He just slid in, and then all of a sudden the forward was just composed enough to just, oh, I'll just pull it inside and score my right.
He has games where he's an absolute rock at the back and he wins every header, just manhandles the striker that he's on. And then there are other games where he looks old, basically, I think.
Yeah. Collins did all right, composing himself pretty well. The wing backs were fine. Disley and Summerfield was pretty poor. I don't really rate him, but hopefully he'll come good.
Yeah, I'm sort of hit and miss for Summerfield because he's like a younger Disley in the sense that he can get you a goal out of something. And he can get he's on 3 or 4 goals from midfield or something like that.
Well, you liked my description though of his shot though, didn't you? Trying a bit too hard with that description.
Yeah, it was a bit over the top.
He was though. His eyes lit up. Like, I'm having this, and it's landed somewhere near Gatwick's runway.
And there are just other times with him where he gives the ball away really cheaply, and there's been a few goals this season which have been directly a result of that. So.
Yeah, and
I don't know. I'm very much hit and miss with Summerfield, but at the same time, you look at some of the options if you want to play 3 central midfielders, and you think you probably have to put him in there at the minute with McAllister injured.
Yeah, you would do, absolutely. Bolawinmore was fine, did okay, and Jackson, not really, considering what we saw at Luton. He wasn't the same sort of player.
And Morecambe as well. Morecambe, I thought we had a right player on our hands.
He seems to be, it feels to me more of an impact guy that comes on at 60 minutes and rips someone to shreds.
I just think he needs a goal. Needs a goal. And I think, I don't think playing him wide, sort of in a 3 or in a 5 or whatever, how you want to describe it, perhaps suits him perfectly. But at the same time, you're not going to put a guy that scored 1 goal this season in the centre over Bogle, are you?
Yeah, and it certainly showed.
I suppose you could describe it a bit like Amund at Morecambe. He was sort of a wide in a 3 and didn't perhaps fulfil his potential, but at the same time, like, Bogle's in the middle and there's no switching that.
Yeah, and
so he needs to adapt his game a bit and sort of get involved a bit more from that left-hand side, really.
So there's a point at towards the end of the game on Saturday where he was through, and anyone with any bout of confidence would have had a pop. But what he tried to do is he tried to lay it back towards the middle when it was already become packed, and it was just the biggest wasted opportunity. And he took a lot of stick for that, because he just, anyone with any ounce of confidence would have just put their laces through it. And he had nowhere near it. And that's not what you want to see from a guy whose main criteria is pace and power, just to go onto it and then lash it. And that's all he needs to do. If he keeps doing it, he'll get two or three opportunities a game where he can just run at the defence and then have a shot.
Yeah.
One in six will go in and he'll look amazing.
Yeah, and there was one time, I think, well, no one was there to see it because it was a record low crowd for... whatever, for a competitive game at Blundell Park, some bollocks like that, but I wasn't paying attention. But he did get a goal against Sheffield United.
Yes.
And I just want to see it in the league, and hopefully he can kick start and just find that touch that he showed at Morecambe and at Luton and kick on again.
Yeah, exactly.
We do need other people than Bogle to sort of chip in the goals, that's for sure. If we're going to do anything this season.
I do think we're a little bit over-reliant on him, and it's not down to the fact that I don't think 80% of the play goes through him. Not like it used to do in like when Akpo used to play for us, where everything was to him and he wasn't that good, so it didn't really materialise into anything. He is a class above everyone else, but what it does is everybody else, like Jackson, is instead of taking a shot, he'd prefer to take the safe opportunity and pass it back to him. And it's that sort of, these guys need to be brimming with confidence too, and they should be allowed. And Big Nut's right in terms of, we need to create and foster an atmosphere in the ground where it's a case of, yeah, you try something, mate. You do something. You're not going to be chastised for it.
No. And I think for the most part this season that's been the case. I think there's one instance against Carlisle where in the lower, there was a chap that had a go at Danny Andrew after they scored one of their goals. And it's just like, it's just completely unnecessary. And I think the guy actually got arrested because it kind of like really kicked off in there.
Did it really?
Or it looked like he was escorted out by police anyway.
I did tell Bose to fuck off to Scunny in the heat of my anger on Saturday, so I apologise
really
for that.
That
yeah.
bad. Oh dear. That's embarrassing, Alex. Come on.
Well... he showed me he's torn his hamstring now, so he'll be away for a while.
It'll be away for a couple of months, I think, before we see him again. I don't think we'll see him before the new year.
All in all, it's going okay. You can't really ask for more for the start of the season, I think.
I mean, we're ninth, we're in the sniff of the playoffs. I mean, it's an incredibly tight division.
Yeah, so that's the only downside, isn't it?
We are going to have to keep the pace of the points just to make sure that we're in the top half, really.
He's
let alone the playoffs. Yeah. So.
The problem is, because we've got a couple of tough games coming up, it doesn't take more than two or three defeats when you get, or two defeats in a draw when you go, oh crap, since when did we drop down here?
Yeah,
exactly. That's the only problem. Yeah. So we've got to be on it. And I can imagine us getting somewhere at Portsmouth. I can imagine us winning at Donny in front of that incredible crowd of about 20,000 or whatever it's going
to
be.
Yeah, and we'll come on to that. But I do think that, you know, I mean...
I quite like that link. I thought I was going to go with that one, but no, I got shut down, did I?
Yeah, but I'm just on my train of thought here, Alex, sorry.
That's all right.
But it's like the old cliche, and everyone keeps when you're saying it, in this division anyone can beat anyone. You hear it in the Championship, you're in the Premiership. But it's like anyone can actually beat anyone in this division. Like, there are some bizarre results.
Well, look how we played against Luton.
Yeah, and put three past Plymouth, and then Plymouth suddenly go on a bit of a slopey run.
And Morecambe looked like nothing but absolute relegation fodder.
Yeah, and they went on an amazing run at one point to start the season. And yeah, so I mean, it's all upside down and topsy turvy half the time.
If we can keep consistent, we could be in for a special season. But
that's absolutely the key. You just got to find in the new year, just got to string a bunch of wins together or an undefeated run. And see where that takes you, basically.
Yeah. What was I going to say? So, yeah, I think I'm done with that part. We're all very well and all very happy.
Should we look ahead the next couple of games and possibly January briefly?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, we're an incredibly organised podcast, as you can tell.
Well, it sounds like you're eating Doritos on the other end of the line.
Well, you sound really fuzzy, so I'm not eating anything.
It was, well, you're in Louth, that's why.
Yeah, I know. We'll have to do this over bloody Wi-Fi and FaceTime audio because of lack of signal, thanks to a certain telecommunications company.
Yeah, they're awful, mate.
Pretty useless.
No comment. Yeah, it was... I think the next couple of games are going to be quite special. Portsmouth is one that everyone's been looking forward to because it's the biggest club in the league. But as you keep seeing it on social media, if we're going, oh, in 2008 they were playing AC Milan and Ronaldo.
AC Milan.
It's like, well, you were playing, anyone could do that. We could spend 185 million or something and go and play AC Milan, but we'll be down here in League Two fighting administration like you guys were a couple of years later.
Yeah.
So they're about right in terms of their position, just a little bit like Bradford. They've got, and they'll be back up in League One and fighting for a position in the Championship. But you got to think, the crowds are big, but they're not enormous. And without, it's fantastic to see the support around, but League One, top of League One, that sort of with Sheffield United and stuff like that is probably where they should be.
Yeah.
Because the Championship's huge now.
Yeah, it is. Apart from like the Burtons and the Rotherhams that just kind of like sneaky hang on in there for a bit.
Yeah, exactly. And they do like what we in Stockport and Crewe Alexander did the same way. You're just hanging on for dear life. And
Yeah. Yeah, I think when the fixture list came out, these were the two fixtures that you looked at and you think that is a cracking pair of fixtures.
Yes.
1 week after the other. And it's like, you just think back to the last 6 years and we had like Welling away and Barrow at home or something like that in a two-game run. And like, this is like the we are back kind of moment, I think, these two games. So I think that's why perhaps people are getting really, really keen for it and snapping up tickets and all that sort of thing.
But did you like the idea that there should be one game, like we should try and organise? Like, it doesn't have to be a big game. Just one game a season where you go, right, everyone try and get home for that game, make your plans around it, come back to watch us play Barnet, and all of a sudden you get that thing where you go back to a game and instead it's 4,000 as an exile or something, you're going back and it's 8,000 or something, and it's a little bit of buzz around a match that isn't always necessarily there.
Yeah, something like a theme at like an exile day or something like that.
Yeah, homecoming. The homecoming match.
Put like online offers on or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Yeah, absolutely.
£5 off tickets. Yeah,
attendances have been good, but I mean, Brundle Park is always amazing when it's full.
Yeah, it's fourth highest in the division we are for average attendance.
Yeah, and the one slightly disappointing thing for me is we're second bottom for clubs away fans at Blundell Park.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you think you get out of the conference and you get out of the 30 or 40 people in the away end, and it doesn't improve that much in this division. It's a bit annoying, that, to be honest.
Yeah, I think we've forgot that. And also, we're going through something incredibly special at this club where, for some reason, away games are like the places to go.
Thing to do, aren't they?
And we were never like that. I remember going to places like Nottingham Forest and stuff where we would take 500-600, which is when you're going to Crawley and stuff, we took 500 there. Go, oh, I thought we'd have brought a few more.
Yeah.
But that was the average we had against Forest in sort of like 2001. And you imagine now if we were in the Championship and going, oh, we're going to play Forest, like literally just down the road.
Yeah.
It would be 2,500. What I'd love to see is a few more bums on seats at home, because, yes, these away games are brilliant, but the money doesn't go to the club. It goes to the other team.
And that's where you're sort of really hoping for a home end sellout against Portsmouth, really.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that is the game that you really want to see sort of 6,500 home fans in.
Yeah, I think the club actually do need to take some serious consideration and start thinking about what can they do to try and transfer the atmosphere and the camaraderie and the feeling we get for an away game back to Blundell Park. Because Blundell Park is nowhere like, and it's never going to be, I understand that, but something needs to be done in the ground to make that atmosphere and make it better, because it isn't what it could be.
Yeah, I think it's a common problem across football, sort of replicating away end atmospheres in the home end. But I think a lot of the reason why the away games are so good is sort of the camaraderie and just the day out sort of sense of it all.
Boys on tours,
making the day of it kind of thing.
And it must be nice. It'd be incredible. It's always going to be incredible if I wanted to be a Grimsby Town player. But like, you're playing at Doncaster and you're Bogle or whatever, and you turn around, there's going to be 4,000 of them, and you're going, I'm with
hopefully.
Them. Yeah, I'm with them. And you'd be like going, oh Christ, it means something, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of great sort of images and footage from Doncaster. And
do you want to?
Hopefully, if the result goes our way, it'll be a good one.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even like Bolton away when we went there, just the atmosphere was just phenomenal in that second half.
And then, going on to Portsmouth, their players had a bust up, didn't they? Hopefully they haven't sorted it going into Saturday.
I'm not aware of this.
Yeah, they had a proper bust up in the changing rooms at half time. Hang on. Do you know what? I thought you'd know.
No, fill me in on this one because I'm unaware of this.
Or go get me laptop.
Was this last weekend then?
Yes.
Okay. Are we just gonna like cut around these sort of quiet pauses?
No, it's fine. It's okay. I have to pick this one. So Portsmouth duo Michael Doyle and Christian Burgess have issued Grotherham public apologies for their furious dressing room bust up. Pompey defender Burgess was left needing stitches after a half time altercation, which led to both players being subbed at the break in their 2-1 defeat to Stevenage. The duo were seen arguing as
they. So that's why Portsmouth didn't come in on Mayaka that weekend then.
Yeah, that was their fault, yeah, mate. The duo was seen arguing as they left the pitch. Boss Paul Cook hit out at the players after the game, claiming they had caused the defeat. There has been an incident. I'm not going to insult Pompey's fans' intelligence. There was obviously a problem at half-time to make two subs like that. It affected the changes we can make, and that's the way it is. There you go.
All right.
So let's hope that animosity is still there.
Well, bright start, getting frustrated, getting the lead first half, and maybe they'll unravel a little bit.
Yeah, I love it when Blundell Park's spiky, when it's got that spiky atmosphere, and everything those players do. I want it to be a nasty atmosphere for fans. I want them to be.
I tell you what, the best one for that I've experienced this season, even though it was a loss, was Cheltenham at home.
Was it? Well, yeah, he doesn't like
him. Like, the lower finders got absolutely rowdy as hell against Cheltenham. It was brilliant.
I would happily land one on Harry Pell's face. I've got to admit,
it wasn't even towards Harry Pell.
Just anybody.
These two short lads that were just taking the piss. And yeah, it got quite angry in the lower, actually.
It's taking a bit of time, but I'm looking forward to stuffing them, and it'll come because they're only a shitty non-league team. But it'll be nice to just stuff them a little bit. And
we play them away quite late in the season, don't we? I believe it's like March or April.
Oh, come playoff show out form. Will they take another 7,000 or whatever it is?
Oh, if it is late in the season and they have a really crap run, wouldn't it be amazing to send them down?
It would. We're dreaming a bit too much. It would be nice that, because they just seem to. I didn't really care about them, but they're just all nippy and naffy, and they're just always. They're the equivalent of a Yorkshire Terrier.
Really sort of irritating theme. Irritating team.
Yes, definitely.
They're like Gateshead, but slightly bigger.
Yes. Not big around, though. And then so let's talk about the Donny ticket arrangement, because it seems to be getting some people's backs up.
And I kind of see it. Yeah, okay, I agree. Like, I'm a season ticket holder. Sort of four per season ticket is a bit excessive. But from the club's perspective, when you have an away end, they've given us an initial allocation of over 3,000. I mean, when's the last time we took 3,000 for an away game?
Yeah, and you'd think, looking at it, and I mean, I don't know the difference between Donny and Knox County, really. Donny's are closer, yes, absolutely. But I'd have expected that limit of 3,000 to be, and that wouldn't have been hit. It's taken everyone by surprise, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things that just sort of builds up into sort of this demand, and I think the new manager and the new optimism helps. I think it being close to Christmas actually helps, because that, I think people view it as sort of the Lincoln game, in a sense, where it's a big game around Christmas to go
and
to.
I think maybe it's only
an hour on the train.
Yeah, and maybe give the train's another thing. I'll talk about that in a sec. But I think the club might be given give some credit to the club. Maybe it's entirely false, but it is Christmas, and people like me who live away from home, they might be home by then, and then that's why four tickets. So like my dad's a season ticket holder. If I come back and my brother comes back and my sister comes back, maybe he goes, yeah, and we're all town fans, so why are they not just going, I'll buy all four of us and we'll go together as a family? Because that might be one of the things.
Like, yeah, from my perspective, and you're a trust member as well, so I suppose you're only sort of skipping the queue by one in a way if you were to do that, because you don't have a ticket for Donny, do you?
No, I'm not. I'm going to. I'm going to Brighton to listen to Jules Holland.
Oh, lovely, lovely.
Well, it was what I wanted to do.
But me and my dad are season
I wasn't going to get up to Donny anyway.
No, but me and my dad are season ticket holders, and we go to away games with a group of us who are all season ticket holders. But the one thing that this four at the time allowed us to do was only two people had to have the season tickets when we got the eight tickets for the eight of us that are season ticket holders.
Yes.
So it was much easier to arrange from our perspective.
Yeah, and
so from that point of view, I bloody love it. But I do understand that a few people feel a bit pissed off
and
about
I can understand that, but it's been polluting my timeline on Twitter all day. And it's you got to a point now where we're going, if you feel this strongly about it, you should have made, you saw the demand and how quickly they were going. You should have made decisions and plans. You could do it over the phone, online, or in person.
Yeah, so there are season ticket holders moaning about it.
And you had enough chance.
I don't really think season ticket holders that missed out have too much of a leg to stand on, because it wasn't like Glastonbury where it sells out in second or whatever.
Yeah, you had 3 days where you could go, well, hang on, this is going quicker than we thought, let's get them. And I know we'll probably get the extra 4,000, because what they don't want is people going, well, I've got a DN postcode, everyone going into the home end. So they will give us that extra 4,000.
If they're able to give Leeds 4,000 tickets, I don't see why they shouldn't be able to give us 4,000.
Let's face it, we're as big as Leeds.
I think the only thing that they'll be discussing with Yorkshire Police is the fact that it's Scunny Millwall and I think Rotherham Chef Wednesday
is
on the same
really?
Day. Yeah, this is this, I think that is why they're having sort of policing issues, just because there's three big games going on within like a 40-mile radius.
In other news, the North Lincolnshire was set on fire.
Yeah, well, I think this is most of the reason why the game got put to 12:30.
It makes sense.
Well, I mean, you got Millwall coming up north and changing at Doncaster, and you got town fans going across, getting off at Doncaster.
So the only problem is we asked the Transpennine Express if they were going to increase it, because they've obviously had enough planning to be able to put on, say, their dry trains, and whether you agree with that or not is up to you. I don't necessarily agree with it, but we know full well there are times when we go to a game and go, I see the regular dickheads here, this could be annoying.
I mean, in the big crowds there are always some people that are just there
to kick off, just to
be an idiot.
Yeah. So
it is a small number, but they are present, and there's no denying it.
But the fact is that they're not putting on extra trains, and those carriages are not big. They're not like the ones that I'm used to down here, where it's like an 11, 12 coach train. It's a three coach train.
Yeah, it's a three
for,
coach
for what could be 4,000 people, and it's ridiculous that that's what they're going to do. They're going to have to put on something, and hopefully some sense comes to it. They're saying they don't have any rolling stock, but that can't be true. And if it is, then open up that line to, I don't know how easy it is, someone from train companies will tell me otherwise, but open it up to other investors. And that Northern Rail carriage that chugs up to Barton, just flick that on the end of it.
Yeah, we're not going to get into big coming up rail network podcast, but...
and do you know what? I think we're the poorer for it.
Yeah, right. Next week, Alex, next week.
Thank you.
But I do, I don't have a huge problem with dry trains. I mean, most people are going to be getting the train at 7 or 8 in the morning. I mean, and if you can't last an hour at 7 in the morning without a beer, then... you've got a problem, basically. Yeah. to put it bluntly. And yes, I do like a beer on away day. I like a good session in the pub before the game, but I'm not going to see the need to get a train and drink at 7 a.m.
And I don't think the dry train thing is an issue. It's more of a case of that we've got five trains. So that's what, 15 carriages, which is nowhere near enough. And then what you might get is people going at 7 in the morning, and then Yorkshire Police have got a bigger issue with, because you've got a load of town fans there from 7 in the morning with nowhere to go.
They're at 8.
Nowhere to go. But nothing's open apart from McDonald's or a Wetherspoons.
Yeah.
Guess where they're going. So it's up to you what you want to do with that.
And
the worst thing is, obviously, it could mean that some people miss out and don't get the train because they can't get on.
No, I mean, my dad's probably going to drive And then you got the whole problem of, well, parking at a stadium, it's in an industrial estate. I think from my perspective, what I can see to happening is very similar to what happened at Mansfield, where they are incredibly strict on getting you from the train station inside the stadium. So they'll be like, the bar in the stadium is open from 9 or whatever
in the morning,
and they'll just channel you straight to the stadium. I can see that happening.
That would be a hell of a sight at like 8 o'clock in the morning, 1,000 Tower fans in an empty ground just sat there waiting to get on with it.
Yeah, because I mean our friend Tom, who appeared on the podcast once, he got the train to Mansfield, and I mean, he's not exactly a hooligan, he didn't stand a chance. Like, he couldn't even go to the toilet before he got shepherded to the stadium. So I can see something like that happening again at Doncaster.
But there was once when I lived in Lincoln and I couldn't get back to my house.
Yeah.
Because you can't go that way. Well, I can see my house from here. Can I not go over there?
Yeah, so we'll have to see how it plays out. But, I mean, hopefully we'll get the 1,200 tickets and they'll go on sale to trust members and stub holders or whatever. And all this hoo-ha about who gets a ticket, who doesn't, sort of dies down a bit.
Yeah, and the club need to start taking advantage of this away day phenomenon by really starting up a membership scheme. Because if it's going to continue like this, we are going to sell out our allocations at places. And the club can make a bit of money out of us by saying £20 a season and you get priority for away day tickets and stuff.
I disagree with that, because season ticket holders should always get priority.
Oh, I don't care about you lot.
Like, I it's one of the few reasons why when you shit, you buy a season ticket.
Well, it's usually to save your money over the long term, isn't it?
And it's like, yeah, okay, four tickets per season ticket is excessive, and they probably misjudged the demand and the size of the allocation. But season ticket holders should always have first dibs on a one-for-one basis.
We are getting very Grimsby, though, because we've spent more of the podcast talking about our massive following than Omar Bogle.
We're turning into that club a little bit. We can come on to Bogle now if you want.
£2.5 million, and you can have him next.
Yeah, pretty much, in January. Benji came out today saying we'll try and extend him. It'd be brilliant if they could, but I'm not convinced Omar's agent will tell him to accept a bigger contract.
It'll be January or the end of the year, and then we'll use him now, and we'll hopefully, if it's, I would expect £2.5 million, because that bloke from Oxford went for three, and same age.
Yeah.
So hopefully if it's around... But it's Fenty, isn't it?
I got poo-pooed at Bolton away by saying that we should get more than £1 million for him by certain people that we go with. And
tell you something, if he's going from the same price as Ryan Bennett, it's sack the board time, because obviously he can't negotiate his way out of a paper bag. Football's become ludicrous in money now, and even since we sold Ryan Bennett, and if you're not looking at doubling that amount, then we're being taken for a ride.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And yeah, okay, people keep saying, oh, well, he's ours for 18 months, like, why do we need to sell him? But why are we talking about it? And it's like, yeah, okay, the speculation gets boring after a while, it gets a bit frustrating, but, like, being brutally realistic, he's not going to see out his contract here. And, like, we need to make sure that we do get the best for him, and make sure that we bloody enjoy watching him play while he's still here.
Yeah, and also making sure that he enjoys himself as well. The welfare of him is just as important as anything else. If he likes being at town and he likes being around his old boss and stuff, then that's brilliant, and keep him on and stuff. But hopefully, if he likes that, just go, yeah, stick an extra year on my contract, it doesn't matter to me. But yeah, that's an idealistic world that I live in.
Yeah. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens. If someone from the Championship offered ridiculous money, sort of in the couple of million range, I wouldn't be surprised by it.
Yeah,
I just think that's the way football is.
Yeah, and
from the last time that we had a genuinely hot prospect kind of thing.
And thinking of it like that, so a club of over four million in debt. So it's a. You can see how big those amounts would be to us as a club. It's a big thing, and it's something to be not taken lightly. But
and especially if, like, you can chuck an extra, if you chucked half of that back into the playing budget, that makes a hell of a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. So the very quickly, the club's accounts were out, and we'll talk about that another day. But a couple of things.
Made 80 grand, didn't we?
Yeah, there are a couple of things to put out. So we, for some reason, we increased, and this is by all means not a criticism, but it's a one to be flagged that we didn't really do much of a charity donation the year before. I think it was about 200 quid. And then this year we did, well, last season we did £2,000 worth of charity donations.
Okay.
And
do we know what charities to?
No, it just says charity donations or political donations, but it wasn't political donations.
So okay.
I haven't seen anything advertised. And if we're doing that, then that's brilliant and we should advertise it, which is basically what I'm saying.
I reckon it must be those sort of on-pitch presentations, a lot of it, that where they hand the checks over that, yeah, I just haven't paid attention to.
Probably we're rolling in it too much if we're giving £2,000 away.
there's a stubborn, stingy, stubborn bastard right there.
Yeah, sorry, little Timmy, you got to go buy your fake leg from someone else, mate. I want some leather seating and pads on my seat before we start doing that for you. Yeah, no, thank you.
No, absolutely not.
And then the other thing as well, we lost about 30. So they did a thing where they showed you the year-on-year staffing. So we've lost a full timer. And then we've gained a part-timer in staffing at the club over a year. And then the other one which was left, and I did ask a couple of people about, but they weren't sure, is that we lost 30 people in terms of match day staffing.
Just disappeared.
30. So it could mean, and this is what we did, we couldn't work out, is whether it's just one person over, say, 30 matches, or yeah, it is actually 30 people per match.
People per match.
Yeah, and what it would suggest is, because obviously the other two have been for a per year status, I would suggest, yeah, we've actually lost 30 people running the ground per match.
Yeah, I'd read it that way.
Because
well,
you can't change your formula mid explanation, and that's quite a huge thing. So it could be the trust.
What are the match day numbers? Is it like 230? I think it is.
Yeah, something like that. So it was like 263, and now it's 230. And it could be. So there were a couple of things that it could be. Is it could be that obviously the trust are now running the bars.
Yeah,
it could be that. But other than that, it's a bit of an odd one actually, and it wouldn't be a bad idea if that was an explanation came out. So
yeah, like I mean, I'm all for sort of running the club off the pitch as efficiently as possible, so long as it's done properly.
We don't want an old ambulance simulation again.
No, just a clarification, I suppose, for that one would be nice. Just to understand what's actually happened, but.
Yeah, it was just they were the highlights of it, and we'll go into it in a bit more detail one day in an incredibly boring podcast. So.
But yeah, made 80 grand, didn't we? So that's not
too
bad.
Yeah, it's good. It's all we're all buying new TVs. but yeah, it was a nice thing to do, and hopefully we'll make a little bit more this year. But we need to get bums on seats at Blundell Park, not just away from home.
No, it starts with Portsmouth, I think.
Yeah, it does.
If we can get a big crowd for Portsmouth and we get a good result, I think that'll sort of help bump them up a couple more, because it's not worth forgetting that home attendances are up on last season.
Yeah, hugely.
So we have made a difference, but it would just be nice to get that extra little kick from it as well.
Yeah, and this is where Blundell Park's restrictions go, because I reckon we've got about 5,500 to 6,000 seats with a decent view. Anything over that, you're getting to a point where you're getting restricted views, and you get in a place, and that puts people floating around coming to the club, it puts them off, and that's where the limitations of Blundell Park actually do come into it.
Yeah, there are a lot of restricted view seats, and the other sort of much less important but quite annoying thing is it gives everyone a different idea of what the actual capacity of the stadium is.
Yes.
Like some people think it's 10,000, some people think 9,000, some people think 8,000.
I have no idea. All I know is that when we used to have the green temporary seating, it was 10,033.
Yeah, all I know is that we class the Scunny game as a sellout and there are 8,400 people there.
Yeah, which is nowhere near.
No, so I'd say an absolute max sellout would probably be 8,500.
Yeah. So I don't have anything else to cover. What about you?
No, that's about it from me.
Good.
Yeah, we'll probably come back after the Donny game, I would have thought, wouldn't we?
Do you want to do a last bit about the profile bit?
you're leading the way on the profile. Yeah. I think we're making a return for this segment.
Yeah, so we're all
after a long time.
Yeah, it is, and we should do it more often. We're all saddened to know about the loss of Paul Futcher. I was lucky enough to watch a couple of games. He was just as I was starting to get, so I was 9 years old.
Yeah, I was a bit too young for Paul Butcher, yeah. But my dad holds him in very high regard.
I saw him three times. We beat Sunderland 3-1, drew with Wolves 0-0, which scuppered their promotion. And I'll be honest, it was one of those things where it's just all a blur, and all you remember is the sounds and the smells. And but from everyone I've talked about, they held him in incredible regard. And so we have to take a bit of time to memorize him, because from all the people I've talked about, he was an amazing player. He was incredible. So he's a Chester lad. One thing I'll throw out there first and foremost, I didn't know Danny Murphy was his nephew.
You told me this just before we started recording. I was surprised by that one, actually.
Yeah,
I did not know that at all.
Yeah, so that was one of the things that I found out about him as well, which was quite interesting.
Quite a footballing family then.
Yeah, before, as he played for Chester, Luton, City, Oldham, Derby, Barnsley and Halifax, he's really held in high regard at Derby and at Luton, which is any of the games that he's played over 100. So, like Luton, he played 131, Barnsley played 230, and in for Town, he played 132. He first caught the eye of Alan Buckley back when we were playing Halifax in a Yorkshire Cup game in a pre-season friendly. He was playing in their reserves.
Yeah, I was going to say he was sat in the reserves, wasn't he?
And in the time, in 1977, he was the highest paid, he was the highest, most expensive defender ever paid for when he was playing for Man City. And he made the second division team of the year twice in the 70s. So he had a huge pedigree, but very similar to Danny Collins. But thankfully, he hasn't got to a point where he was drifting in Halifax and not really being noticed by anyone. And Buckley snapped him up for 10 grand to replace Andy Tilson. And most people think that was probably the best buy he ever made. And he was formidable. He was really classy. There are some brilliant ones. Grimsby Town PR put out a tweet where it showed there was a bit when he was playing for Barnsley, but if you want to see what he played like, it was that he took it off a player and moved forward with it and glided past two or three people to put through an assist. He's very much like exactly what John Stones wants to be as a player. He was played out from the back and was a really accomplished player. One of those people where you go, is his first yards in his head, especially when he was playing at Town, because he was about 35 when he came. But from all intents and purposes, he sounded phenomenal. He spoke fondly of his time at Town. He was always really happy with it. He didn't really know he was a cult figure. I was reading old Sing When We're Fishing fanzines that I found and I'd bought at a car boot sale. And they were talking about him there. And he didn't really know about it until someone gave him them. And it was... it's a sad loss that we lost him, but he played 132 games for Town, never scored. He only ever scored two goals in his career, one at Luton and one at Oldham, from 74 to 82. But he played in Town till 94, and then after that he went on to Dundalk, who were obviously the Irish team cavorting in the Europa League now. And it's very sad that he went, but at Crawley there was a beautiful memory with him when we had a minute's silence and a minute's applause at 4 minutes, and Crawley did a lovely sing when they said RIP Futch at the top.
Really, really classy from Crawley, that.
Yeah, and there was it shows the calibre of the player and the man that he's been held in such regard. All the teams he's played for felt it quite sadly. And It was one of those. It was a sad moment, but we get left with some very good memories.
Yeah, and I think you were saying how he's held in such high regard for everyone he's played for. But I was reading the Shrewsbury Forum because I was curious to see how they were getting on with Hurst.
Yeah,
this morning actually, and there was a two-page thread about Futch on there, and just sort of them sharing their memories of when he was playing against them, and sort of I think there are a couple of memories. Like I think he had a shocker one game, and he scored like this 30-yard chipped own goal against his own keeper or something like that. And so I mean, it's not just his own teams that are sort of remembering him, but sort of other teams across the leagues as well.
Do you know what, I was just reading that off a couple of websites that I've listened to, and that's wrong, because I remember him scoring a I know watching videos of him scoring an absolute pearler for Town. So he didn't score just two. He scored another one, and that's not recorded. But I remember it was like 30 yards out or something, and he just went for it. I can't remember where it was, and I'll apologise. I can't, but some of you listening will do. But I remember him scoring a screamer, so that was wrong.
Tweet us and tell us where we're going wrong.
Yeah, exactly. But I remember it was a beauty. And but yeah, that was that's all I can really say on the guy. It was very sad, and it's one of those things now, isn't it, where we're getting to that age where that we'll lose players that we know of in living memory, Keith Alexander and Futch and stuff.
Yeah, I mean too soon, but it is starting to happen, sadly.
Yeah, it is.
But I mean, far too soon.
But it's we don't want to leave it on too much of a somber note. Yes, we'll be back hopefully before the Christmas period. I'd like to do one just after Donny taking us in. Who have we got Boxing Day?
Accrington at home.
That was it. That's a huge crowd for that.
Which is why I think sort of Portsmouth and Donny away are really sort of drawing the people to go to them, because Accrington at home on Boxing Day doesn't exactly appeal to the masses.
No, exactly. So we'll do one just after Donny, and then we'll talk about the Christmas
before the Christmas run.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that as well. But it was nice to see you all and talk to you all again, and we shall see you all very soon.
Yep, speak to you soon.
Bye.